This is the Day Zero update for October 15th, 2017. I'm Philippe Bonanova.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
And we have a sparse lineup this week as far as personnel goes. That's okay. We have we do not have a sparse lineup as far as content goes.
No, we do not.
So, yeah, let's kind of get into that. And we'll start with what we've been up to this week, because I'm sure we've been playing stuff. Yes. So, for me, it's been, Forza 7, primarily on the PC this week. I've had the very interesting and kind of fun experience of playing the game on the PC, then, finishing watching a movie on the Xbox One and firing it up, and then having my progress automatically sync over, and it's like, this is actually kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I can see why Microsoft really kind of wants to push that angle of it. It's just a shame the PC version is, I think it's digital exclusive. So, yeah, if you want the PC version, I think you actually have to buy it digitally. Could be wrong about that, but yeah, I didn't see a PC, boxed copy on Amazon or anything like that. So, yeah. I should also point out that the PC version is 99 gigabytes. Yeah. That's all the high quality assets are in there by default. So, I hope you have a lot of hard drive space because you're going to need it. Yeah. The standard Xbox One version clocks in at 67 because they're doing that smart download thing where they're only downloading the assets you actually need. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah, still 67 gigs. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's very intriguing to me in the amount of ways that Turn 10 is trying to get you to spend your credits.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's the specialty dealer that gives basically it's like remember the used car dealer in Gran Turismo that would pop up now and then and sometimes there'd be rare cars in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same idea. Except the only thing that this guy sells is rare cars. So yeah, it's like one of those. Go check it out, and if there's something in there you want, you better have enough credits to get it because you probably aren't going to see it again for a while. So. Yeah, that's kind of neat. Plus, you can basically buy level rewards without actually having to level, which is kind of dumb and irritating. But
yeah,
it's kind of okay if a level reward happened to be a car that you wanted, and you could just spend your credits and get it, and you'd probably end up. It does actually cost you less than usually buying the car itself, so. That's kind of okay, I suppose. But even if you do buy the level rewards prematurely, it doesn't preclude you from getting them when you do level. So mm-hmm. It's like, it just re-roulettes the stuff that you would have gotten. So, yeah, it doesn't take anything away from you from doing that. It just gives you another opportunity to spend more credits. they like to do that. So. Yeah, what they're really pushing is the driver gear, which is completely pointless. It's, just outfits for your driver. Which makes no sense whatsoever, because most of the time you don't see them other than in the menus. There's no real replay. Well, there is, but, you don't really see him because of the tinted windows most of the time, so. I'm going to talk at length about that in the review, and to say that my opinion of Forza 7 is mixed would be kind of an understatement, because I want to love it, and Turn 10 is making it difficult for me to do so. So, look forward to that.
Am I missing out on much by sticking with Forza 6 if I decide to do that?
Yes. You are. That's the big rub, because all of the system improvements that they've made really do make a difference.
Yeah.
That dynamic weather system that they've got in there is amazing. It's one of those things that maybe wait for a sale and pick it up then. But yeah, at full price, I'm not sure it's worth it unless they back off on this loot box and trying to fleece you for as many credits as they can mentality that they got going on right now. So, well, at least they did change the VIP rewards back to the way it was in Forza 6, so permanent 2x credit boost. So we got that going for us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it for me. How about you, Pat?
It's been all NHL 18 for me this week. Just kind of going back and forth between playing NHL 18 and watching the season. And yeah, I'm fully immersed in hockey right now. And apart from a rough loss for the Avalanche last night, that's a pretty good place to be. So, not really much to say about it. I'm just thoroughly enjoying the game at this point.
You got a review coming at some point, I guess?
You know, this one would probably be worth reviewing.
Yeah, because it seems like there's a lot of systemic changes in there that have really changed
yes.
how the game is. So.
Yeah, they've gotten rid of the last vestiges of the unfortunate NHL 15. I mean, obviously, they made a really good game for NHL 16, but there were a lot of lingering things in that in 17 that just kind of reminded you of not so great times with the franchise.
Yeah.
And it seems like this year was where they purged it. And yeah, we don't want anything in here that's going to remind you of NHL 15. And yeah, it turned out really well. And I've said this on the show before, but they really got into the whole spirit of the expansion theme that we have this year because of the Vegas Golden Knights coming into the league.
Yeah, so. And basically turned it into features that people have been asking for like 10 years.
Yep. Mm. Well, even last year we had relocation.
Yeah.
But now we have, you know, you can play an expansion draft with Vegas. You can play an expansion draft with any of the 30 other teams and set your protected lists as you would. You know, maybe you think that the way your team of choice would have should have done it was wrong or was different from how they actually did. And you get the chance to play that out. And
you've also got the chance to do completely custom team.
Yep. You can add a 30-second franchise. You know, it lets you play with realignment, things like that. Mm. So if you maybe set another team in the Eastern Conference, you'll have the chance to realign the divisions so that you have four divisions of eight teams. Yeah, you get a lot of customization tools, and it is amazing. Mm. They really went all out with the expansion theme, and it's really fun to see what you can do with creative tools when Rammer's team gives them to you.
Yeah.
So that's been a lot of fun. And that's been my week.
All right, my turn. I'm still playing more of Sakura Wars. So long, my love. And again, as I go further in this game, I really do realize it is just a god-awful crying shame that this series has not been localized more over here.
Hmm.
It's just, it is a delight. It really is. And I've come to realize, I mentioned a while back when I first started playing this game that, you know, some of the characters, like there's the cowgirl, her name, by the way, is Gemini, and who is a complete weeaboo.
Yeah.
But the other character I want to talk about is Kyren Archer, which is in Japan, she's called Sagita Weinberg. Sagita Weinberg. She is the African-American woman who you know, the moment she sees you, she's a lawyer from Harlem and she's a leader of a local biker gang. And the moment she sees you, she really, really just does not like you. I've been doing more in the game trying to get on her good side, and I've come to realize that she may be my favorite character in this entire game. Because she's such a badass, you know? And, well, her whole story arc is just really interesting. I'm not going to spoil it, but also through Sakura Wars, I've started sort of exploring the other works of Hiroi Oji, who, for those who don't know, he is the creator of the Sakura Wars franchise, and he's a fairly prolific writer and designer of a lot of different media, not just games. He also is involved in anime and manga and prose fiction. I came to find out that he's also the creator of this other series called Far East of Eden, which is basically a, how can I describe it? It's a RPG series that takes place in a sort of alternate fictional fantasy version of Japan. Sort of like how, like, Jade Empire takes place in sort of an alternate fantasy version of China.
Right.
But it's also heavily based around the idea of various misconceptions and cultural issues that Westerners have with Japan. Hmm. And for whatever reason, the games usually are introduced by this Western explorer type who is usually this guy. I'm trying to remember. Let's see his name. He's introduced as this guy named Paul Hieronymus Chada, which, if you don't know, if you that's actually just something of an anagram of Hiroshi Adachi, who is the original, actually the real name of Oji Hiroi. And depending on how you see the game, sometimes he's Sigmund. His profile is Sigmund Freud. Sometimes it's Karl Marx. It's funny. But I also found out he's the creator of this anime called Virgin Fleet, which is, yeah, it's odd. He, like I said, he's pretty prolific. He's done a lot of stuff. But other than that, also have been working on, I've also finally gotten back to playing Final Fantasy XIV after something of a hiatus, partly brought on by the fact that the 4.1 patch had to load, and that took a little while. Still in Heaven's Ward, still, I'm at the point now where we're getting ready to get the ship ready to go to where Nidhogg is. So having to deal with that, getting sort of trying to get, you know, try to find other members of the Scions, found the last few loyal members of the Crystal Braves.
What did you think of that whole story arc?
God damn, that was a convoluted but exciting piece of work. I'm surprised. Like, the way that story was written, I kind of wonder if they were like, you know, because after the part that begins before Heaven's Ward starts, basically is just giant chaos. And part of me wonders if they were like, man, we got to keep some of these. I'm honestly wondering if they were like, you know, it's time to get rid of some of these characters. And then, like, partway through, they're like, wait, the fans might not like this. We might need to come up with some kind of thing to keep them back, get them back, keep them in the story. So. But
what if I told you in an indirect way that the story arc you just finished up was actually there to set up Stormblood?
Yeah, I actually kind of already know some about Stormblood, specifically who the princess is.
Hmm.
So, you know,
princess?
Thanks. Yeah. Well, what's her name? I know who she is.
Hmm.
What her what she what her actual position is in the Eastern country. But anyway, yeah, so that's what I've been playing. So, yeah, I guess it's time to go on and start the show proper.
Yeah, and we'll get into the shrapnel, because we got a couple of quick items here. Shadow of War came out on the PC. It's one of those games that uses the infamous de novo DRM, which is, you know, the bane of a lot of people's existence.
Yep.
And it was cracked in a day.
Yep.
So
that didn't take long.
That didn't take long, no.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer publisher.
Yeah.
Yep, cracked in a day and available on the torrents as a 96 gigabyte download.
Yep.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's a big game.
Yeah, it's a big ass game, and starting to publishers should probably considering how quickly this got cracked, it might be time for de novo to rethink their business model.
Oh yeah, because they probably won't have very much business in the near future.
Maybe that business model should be cashing in their chips.
Yeah. Because, cash your chips, close it up, shop, because you guys just got BF'd.
Yeah, because I think one of the terms of de novo's deal is, like, if it gets cracked within 30 days, you get a refund. So, I think one day is a lot less than 30. So, yeah, there's that. another in the long incidents involving Shadow of War. And according to a lot of people, that game is actually really good, except for all the crap that Warner Brothers has been shoveling into it. So
again, it's like the shit that happened with Shadow of Mordor. They put financial
shit. James Way.
Yeah, and it's like they didn't have to, because the game was really good and it would have sold like gangbusters either way. So, yeah.
I mean, Shadow of Mordor, it had a whole lot of season pass DLC stuff and all that, and eventually when they released the Game of the Year edition, that was all just kind of built in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if there's a game to get, that's the version you want to get Game of the Year, because it has all the stuff and you don't have to worry about transactions or anything like that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. So, yeah, anyways. And another quick one here. We got a release date for Tokyo Xanadu EX Plus. It's going to be coming out on PS4 December 8th in North America. And I'm actually looking forward to this. I want to play this one.
Yeah.
Take my money, Falcom.
Yep. And this is Falcom Xseed or NS?
It's NISA.
NISA, yeah. Okay, so yeah, we're gonna talk about NISA a bit in a bit later.
Well, no, that's Axis.
Oh, okay,
yeah, so different company.
A little bit later, yeah.
Before we move on, though, just because we should probably bring it up. So those who don't know, next week, Wolfenstein 2: The New Colossus comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I got my pre-order. And so this week, Machine Games decided to put out a little thing on Facebook, or was it Twitter? I think it was Facebook, where it was like, make America Nazi free again.
And somehow that was controversial.
Yes, it was, because that's where we are right now.
Because the Nazis are actually running America right now anyway, so apparently that's a thing.
Yeah, and people are like, oh, liberal cuck, SJW, liberal power fantasy, not buying, blah, blah, blah.
That's okay. It's still going to sell millions of copies.
Yeah, and it was most, to be quite honest, the actual blowback, if you want to call it that, was actually pretty minor. It was just a handful of douchebags, but yeah. I guess it was just the fact that, considering Wolfenstein is a franchise that's been around for, since the early 80s, and it's always been about killing Nazis.
Yep.
And, we got the same crap back when, the original trailer from E3 came out. And it's funny, but here's the thing. Just to make you feel better about humanity, it's pretty much the collective opinion of the majority of not just the gaming world, but the people on Facebook that, yeah, fuck these people.
Yeah, it seems like society has, in general, decided that punching Nazis is actually okay. So, yeah, we're making progress there. So,
yeah. So, anyway, all right, moving on.
All right. So our first big story is IGN has acquired Humble.
Yeah.
This is weird.
Yeah, it is. Humble, of course, is the company that is famous for the Humble Bundles. And, you know, you can get the games, you can pay what you want, it goes to charity. And now IGN owns that.
Yeah, and that in itself wouldn't be so bad. It's not, that's not the real issue. Real issue is that Humble is also a publisher.
Yeah.
So, yeah, now you have a journalistic organization that, you know, practices editorial and does all that kind of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Owning a games publisher.
What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly.
So, this is not good for either of those two entities at this point. Because, okay, if IGN cares about their reputation, let's just assume that they do.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Then, you know, ethically, they wouldn't be able to review any of the games that Humble publishes.
Mm-hmm.
And so any of those games that Humble publishes would not get any exposure from IGN. So, catch 22, anybody?
Yep.
Of course, if they don't care and they do review it, then they just look really scummy.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what they do, why they even did this. I don't
other
think they're going to
review it. Coverage, maybe?
Meh, I don't know. Or maybe they're planning, maybe they'll just keep the Humble Bundle thing intact and maybe spin out the publishing as another company. That's
probably
maybe
the safe thing.
Yeah, because that would really be the only way that they could, you know, keep the integrity that they have.
Yeah.
And, you know, be able to own Humble, because I don't see them really changing too much, you know, as far as companies that could have bought them. They're, like, not the worst.
Yeah.
But... Mm. Yeah, it's just strange.
It's just complicated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like one of those relationship statuses on Facebook. It's like, yeah, it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear. So, yeah, we're going to follow this one because I'm sure there will be more developments as time goes on. I don't expect the Humble Bundles to go away. That's just, you know, they do that. That's just what they do. If IGN were to get rid of that, that would be like, you know, anarchy, mass hysteria, you know. So, yeah, it's the publishing arm of Humble that we really need to pay attention to and see what IGN does there. Because, yeah, that's the real fly in the ointment. Okay, so moving on, we got Atlas issuing a DMCA claim against the RPCS3 Patreon page and getting rebuffed. Yeah, this was regarding Persona 5, because RPCS3 is able to run it.
Yep.
And so they had on their Patreon page, they had instructions on how to get the game to run that apparently Atlas didn't like.
Oof.
Yeah.
Where to begin?
Yeah. Well, I guess we could begin by reading off what Atlas had to say.
All right. So this is what Atlas says. We appreciate the awareness generated by the emulation community for Persona 5. Unfortunately, when our content is illegally circumvented and potentially made available for free in a format we do not think delivers the experience and quality we intend, it undermines our ability to do so by diverting potential support from new audiences.
Okay.
Could that threat be any more thinly veiled?
Mm.
Wasn't so much, yeah, it's like, yeah, we don't want this because then we won't do a PC version.
Yeah.
It also kind of implies that, well, what they really don't like is the fact that in showing Persona 5, they were showing it running at 4K 60. So you could have the PS3 version of the game looking better than the PS4, which is probably not a good look for them. Yeah. At this point, I'm not going to give Atlus any kind of a pass, because, frankly, this is one of the douchiest things that they could have possibly done. Yeah. And also a huge missed opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Because what they could have done instead of whining about the fact that their ROM could potentially be available for free, they could have set up a page on the store to let people buy a copy of the ROM legally.
Yes, they could have.
They could have done that.
They could have
turned
done
it
that,
into,
no.
Yeah, turned it into a positive for them. So I don't know where. It's like, well, we know Nintendo. They're very litigious about their IP. Atlus is another company that is just like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they like to threaten their fans. And it's like the Japanese and the American arm seem to be very different as far as their policies go. So it's like, you don't know what you're getting anymore with these guys.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I also think the emulation authors could have handled this differently.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
because here they are, they've got a Patreon, so they're asking for money.
Mm-hmm.
Optionally,
and they are using actual games to showcase the product that they are asking people for money for. That's kind of painting a giant target on your forehead.
Yeah.
Kind of, except that the Patreon is optional. You don't have to pay for it to get the emulator.
They're still going to profit from it.
Yeah, well, they're still going to profit from it. I mean, they gotta eat, you know?
Yeah.
if they were doing that, they
should keep, like, actual game footage as far away from the promotional side of it as possible.
Yeah, I suppose. You know, it's like PCSX too. They do the same thing. They don't have a Patreon. So I think the fact that they did have the Patreon, that's the big sticking point for those companies. And that and the fact that they were promoting that the emulator could run a game that came out last year. Despite the fact that, that the PS3 is 13-year-old hardware at this point, that's still a new game for it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, PS3 emulation in general, I don't have a problem with. You know, as I said, it's 13-year-old hardware. If they're no longer making it, I figure it's fair game. But, if games are still coming out for it, you might want to exercise a little bit of tact in how you promote your emulator product.
Yeah, if you're going to be actively violating copyrights, then, you know, don't be making money doing that.
Yeah. I mean, there's the only legal defense that Atlus actually, you know, had a leg to stand on was the fact that you did have to circumvent DRM to get that game. That is for now, until RPCS3 adds full drive support, which is something that they're working on. And at that point, it would just be put the disc in and play it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and good luck with that. So, yeah. On the other hand, a lot more people know that RPCS3 exists now. So,
oh, yeah.
Thank you, Streisand Effect.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure that was quite the intent.
It's going to be fun watching this play out.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, Atlus didn't take too kindly to that, but Sony didn't seem to have a problem with it, because a lot of the videos, you know, show Sony stuff, like The Last of Us running in 4K.
So. I think it takes a lot of pressure off of Sony. They can commit fully to the PS4 now and not have to worry about legacy support for the PS3, because the fans have got it.
Yeah. If you've got the hardware to run it, yeah, you can have all the legacy support you want. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on this one too, because I have a feeling there's going to be some more fun stuff regarding our PCS3, not too distant future. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if they do all of the things that they said they want to do. So, yeah, anyways. Now we got our kind of a fighting block happening here. So yes. Let's start with Strider Zeku being released for Street Fighter V in the next coming weeks.
Yep.
Yep. That was a fun trailer.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. It looks like we're getting a stance character here. And the stances are signified by the clothes he's wearing. He has Bushin stance, which is pretty much his default design.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he switches stances, he basically puts on a Strider suit.
Mm-hmm.
And for what is generally being regarded as Strider stance. So,
yeah.
Very cool to see a Rushdown character like this in Street Fighter V. Very aggressive, very good at just being able to open up a defensive player. Still not exactly sure how all of his mechanics work, but I'm sure in the coming days Capcom Unity will be posting their usual breakdown of how everything's supposed to operate.
Mm-hmm.
Really looking forward to this character. I think it's a nice touch that his kick specials actually have the same sound effect as Strider here used sword.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how Zeku plays, and I'm not quite as excited as I was when Minot launched, but this is still a nice touch. I'm really I can see having a sort of pocket Zeku to bring out in long gaming sessions or
just for fun
to deal with certain matchups. He looks so fun to play.
Hmm. Yeah, and this is the end of the season 2 characters, yep, as far as that goes.
Character 6 of 6. So I'm sure we're going to be seeing him playable at Capcom Cup.
Yeah,
in 2 months. In 2 months!
Mm-hmm.
2 months.
We got Capcom Cup.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing we'll have him with the arcade edition that comes out too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the arcade edition retail pack comes with all of the season 1 and season 2 characters. And right. He is the last season 2 character, so he will be in there.
All right. That comes out January, right?
16th.
Yeah, and because this is the big finale for Season 2, I'm not going to be at all surprised if other content joins him.
Because
that does seem to be Capcom's way.
Yeah, it'll probably be stages and, the usual.
I'm completely okay with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the latest stage that they've added?
No.
Cammy, Super Turbo.
Oh.
Yeah.
I like that they're doing that.
Yes, that is a must-have stage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looked so good on the CPS2 hardware.
Mm.
Now just apply that to Street Fighter V's engine, and yeah, it looks exactly how you would expect it to.
We'll have to go and get that.
Yes.
So,
and plus it brings with it another Cammy remix, which, you know,
is always nice. Else. Yeah. So, yeah, good news for Street Fighter V, and also good news for BlazBlue Crosstag Battle.
Yes.
Yep.
Hazama, Rachel Alucard, and Vice Schnee are joining BlazBlue Crosstag Battle, and still we're at maybe less than a third of the roster.
Hmm.
Yep.
So we now have four Blaze Blue characters and two each from Persona, Ruby, and Undernight. Yeah, I'm liking how this is shaking out. All of these characters are probably expected, but it's still nice to see them operating in this game engine, which seems a lot more subdued than Blaze Blue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it reminds me an awful lot of Melty Blood, to be honest. Yeah.
And yes, that Vaishni that we mentioned, yes, that is the same Vaishni from Ruby.
Yep.
Which is just going to show you that, yeah, the folks at Arc System Works are serious fanboys.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be seven characters from each IP in there, so...
Along with a fifth section, simply marked, etc., that also has seven roster spots, but nobody's been put in there yet. They say the next big reveal trailer will be later. Will be late this month, so we'll not have long to wait.
I wonder if they take Guilty Gear characters and bring them in, because
I'm sure that'll be one or two of the etc. category,
probably, because. Yeah, that could be interesting.
I certainly wouldn't mind seeing Potemkin or
other characters.
Maybe get some Tager in there on the Blaze Blue side.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those could be fun. But, yeah. We also got platform announcements that kind of just snuck in there. So.
Yeah, PS4, PC, and if you've been paying attention to what Toshimichi Mori has been saying in recent months, then the Switch version should come as less of a surprise.
Yeah.
So,
is this the first time that the PC gets a concurrent release?
I don't think so. I think they've been pretty good with Blaze Blue of late.
Yeah, because they used to, the PC version used to always be one version back.
Yeah.
But looks like they got that sorted.
I think they've got Central Fiction on there now. I think Guilty Gear Xrd Rev 2 was day and date with the PC version.
Hmm.
Unless we're just talking about Blaze Blue.
Yeah, just Blaze Blue.
Okay. Hmm. No, I think they're caught up.
Yeah.
And then another thing we should mention is Blaze Blue Central Fiction is also coming to the Switch, if it's not there already.
Yeah.
So Toshimichi Mori is very bullish on the Switch.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of developers seem to be very, very pleased with how the Switch is doing, and it seems to be putting their support behind it. So I don't think this is going to be another Wii U situation.
If Nintendo does run into third-party problems, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are really throwing their support behind the Switch.
Yeah. So okay.
It's the the New York Comic Con build showed seven roster spots per IP in a fifth, etc. section. So we're coming up on the 1/3 mark, which we'll probably hit with this next trailer here at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, for those of you who don't math, that's 35 characters.
Out of that.
Yeah, so, which ain't too bad for a starting roster, and I'm assuming there will probably end up being DLC as well later on.
Yeah.
So moving on, we got news from Nisa. East 8 came out a few weeks ago, and it was really good.
Yeah.
Except for one thing.
Yeah.
The localization was kind of, sort of, not so great.
Be honest, I didn't think it was that bad, but... Then again, I've played RPGs all the time, pretty much my whole life, and maybe
we were
I'm
all
just
products of the '90s that had more bad translations than good.
And maybe we just kind of grew numb to
lines back then, or it was shit.
Yeah,
yeah, and I guess in hindsight, we've kind of maybe the standards have gotten a little stricter. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Hmm. Well, Nisa has basically announced that they're going to redo it from the ground up, apparently. So, given that they've acknowledged that the quality isn't there where they want it, Do you think maybe this is an opportunity for them to reprint the game, or do they just patch it?
I think they just patch it.
Yeah, it would be more cost-effective if they just patch it.
Hmm. Yeah, so no collector edition situation where the original one turns into a real collector's item, you know?
Nah.
Well, I mean, they did the whole day one edition thing, and I just don't think they'd want to go back to that well right away. Maybe have a... You can stick Game of the Year edition on anything these days, so maybe something like that further down the road.
Hmm.
But for the immediate future, I would say no.
Okay.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's kind of nice that they're doing it, you know, acknowledging that they had a problem and they're going to fix it. So,
yeah.
On them for that.
It'd be nice if more studios did that.
Yeah.
And it looks like hopefully this is just going to, you know, signal to Falcom that, yeah, it's probably better if we just stick with XE for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, maybe they don't give us enough money, but at least their localizations don't suck.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, Nisa's localization of East 8 isn't, you know, it's not English by any means.
Yeah.
It's just kind of inconsistent, and there were typos and, you know, stuff like that. It's quality control, really. So,
mm-hmm.
It's the kind of stuff that XE, you know, spends a lot of time, you know, weeding out. That,
yes, don't we know it.
Yeah. anyways. Okay, so moving on, we got virtual reality news. Oculus has been out for about a year now.
Mm-hmm.
They had their Oculus Connect 4 event, and they announced some new hardware. They also announced, first off, they announced a permanent price drop for the Rift. Current Rift with touch controllers, so the whole bundle is now $400.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone down quite a bit since it came out. I mean, that's, you know, $200 off at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it came out, all it had was an Xbox controller. It didn't have the two touch controllers, so that's a pretty good deal there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good news for people who want to get into it, because it's about, maybe it's only $100 more than a PlayStation PlayStation VR.
Mm-hmm.
You'll need a beefier system to run it, obviously, and you don't have to buy Move controllers because those are kind of built in, so that's pretty good. They also announced a standalone mobile headset, which they're calling Oculus Go. That's coming out 2018, $200. Mm. Basically going to be an Android headset running a Qualcomm Snapdragon processor, kind of like, you know, a phone on your face. Except
so Google Glass.
No, more like, you know, Gear VR, but all built in. So it's like you don't have the issues of the phone overheating after an hour and all that fun stuff. So, that should. Mm-hmm. To me, that's one of the more interesting announcements because it's an entry point. The price.
Yeah, it's a mass market price point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The entry point is there. The mobile chip that they're using is more than powerful enough to give you a nice, compelling experience. Because they're, you know, doing the tracking on the headset itself, you know, you're not tethered to anything. It's actually kind of a nice, you know, little way to get into VR if you're curious about it and you're not, you know, you don't want to spend the $500-$600 to get a PC rig. This might be a good way to just get your feet wet and see if you want to go further.
Yeah, I love this. I'm a little concerned with how watered down that experience might be to get down to $200, but. If it's not that much of a watered down experience and they can get the software on board, that's pretty compelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's going to run all of the Gear VR stuff that's already out there. It's going to be, I think, compatible with Daydream. So, as far as the mobile stuff goes, that's already a lot of stuff that it will run. And
so it's going to get a lot of market share, too.
Yeah, it's going to get a lot of market share. I think they might have something here. And if it gets what basically, you know, Oculus wants at this point, they want a billion people using VR in a not too distant future. So,
and that's how to do it.
Yeah, get people in on something that's good, but we'll show you that, you know, maybe you want to go a bit further up. Maybe you do want to build that gaming PC, you know? So, but yeah, this is a good start, I find. Along those same lines, they announced the Project Santa Cruz headset, which is kind of the next generation of the Rift. This one will be untethered. We'll do the tracking from the headset. You don't have to have stuff, you know, cameras or anything set up in your room to do the tracking. Good. So that's going to be really cool because it will actually even be able to track stuff behind you, which is pretty compelling. No word yet on price or availability of this one because,
Too early.
Yeah, still a bit early. It's 2018 release, but yeah, I expect more info in the next few months because,
probably holiday 2018, if we're honest.
I would bet that, yeah. Holiday 2018 is probably a safe bet. But yeah, from people who have played with it, it's very light. It works really well. It's not tethered to a computer. That's another, great part of it. Good stuff coming from Oculus as far as the hardware goes. Carmack is fully settled in there, and they're doing some good work apparently. Along with that, they're going to be replacing their Oculus Hub with something that they're calling Dash UI, which is kind of like, so when you boot in, it's kind of like having floating monitors that you can look around at. You could have your Twitter up there, you could have web pages, YouTube, you know, whatever you want to throw up there, you can do. And
nice.
This kind of reminds me of Ready Player One, to be honest, because there was that scene when Wade was in his apartment and he was switching between his work life and his personal, and that's kind of the thing that was going on. He had just kind of floating displays and could check in on what he was doing and move around. It was kind of neat.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's pretty neat. And then they also announced VR Spaces. Well, they've actually had this for a little while. They're just expanding on it. This is basically a social space for people to hang out. You can build your avatar, bring it in. They're announcing that they're going to be working on custom avatar support, so you don't have to just pick a generic one. You can make your own. Assuming some sort of facial mapping might be something that they do eventually. The cool thing was they had a room there with like all the retro consoles. You can go in, like grab a cartridge and put it in and play it. So it was like also an emulator front end, which is awesome. This is what I've wanted to see for a long time. Yeah, it's also Ready Player One, I should point out. That's you know, as far as VR goes, I think it's all going to boil down to Ready Player One. apart from the whole fucking up the world part. Well, actually, we're well on our way to doing that anyway.
It's not related.
No. That happened long before VR, so yeah. But good news from Oculus. I think the people that have said that VR is dead and a fad haven't been paying attention.
Yeah.
It's here. We're a year into it. And I think the state of it is that it's not gonna go anywhere.
It needed to get down to that mass market price point, though. That was critical.
Yeah. It also needed to do it without being tethered to a phone. That's the big key. You don't really want to have your phone strapped to your face because there are problems with that.
So many things can go wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It could fall out. I think I have actually seen that happen.
I believe it.
Yeah. Also, have you ever seen what somebody looks like with a Gear VR headset with no phone in it? It's hilarious. So, that's not a good look. So, anyways. So, basically, what I want to know is, what's your interest in VR at this point? I mean, it's had time to settle in. The prices have started to come down. Is this something that either of you are actually looking at now?
It's going to be a little while, but it honestly, I not just yet. I don't think the software is there just yet. It's going to need to, you know, right now, I'm going to be perfectly honest, with a handful of exceptions, most of the software on the Oculus has been more novelty than anything. And, you know, they're just going to have to, it may take another year or two. For me, at least.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
For $200, I could pretty, especially $200 for a standalone unit. That might be what gets me. And I think that's going to be the case for a lot of people. And I think the installed market base that will stem from that will necessitate a lot of software support. I think it's going to cause a lot of developers to gravitate toward that. And that's where you're going to start to see it really break into the mainstream, as opposed to being kind of this power user novelty that it is at the moment.
I think
the Oculus Go is a game changer that is really understated at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, because even the PSVR at $300 isn't really at $300.
No,
You know, you still have the Move controllers that you have to get. You still have the camera that you have to get. You know, unless you buy the bundle, you're looking at $500 for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So you know that's a big ask for a lot of people still. But yep. $200 for a unit that's just all you need. Maybe a Bluetooth controller. You know, probably would come with it.
Again,
probably good. Yeah, so yeah, I'm interested. I like where this is going now. It's gotten past the point where I think it's past the danger zone of support at this point. All right, so that's been VR, and we'll jump right into our last topic of the day, which is everybody's favorite whipping boy at this point: loot boxes. more specifically, the backlash towards them at this point. And the last thing that seems to have raised the ire of gamers this week was the Star Wars Battlefront 2 beta, which kind of showed off its loot crate type system, which is basically a card-based system. And, yeah, it basically shows that the game is complete pay to win.
Yeah, and after all this and with Forza and Shadow of War, it looks like people are just like, you know what? Screw you people.
Yeah, it's people seem to be sick of it now.
Mm-hmm.
Three major games in a row, all doing very shady things, trying to be very manipulative of the players, trying to employ those addicting game mechanics. There's enough people now that are kind of sick of it. And, you know, Open Critic is another organization that's, they're a big game review aggregator, which we're part of. Now they're going to be calling that stuff out with their review pages.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think, yeah, this is the groundswell, I think, for the end of loot boxes, I believe. Maybe,
or at least that's what we can hope.
Yeah, we could certainly hope. I would very much like it to be, because as I said earlier, this mechanic is really making it harder for me to enjoy the game that I paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, you know, I know that a $60 game isn't really a $60 game, but I expect that when I buy a game, I buy the game and not have to constantly be shoveling money into it just to keep progressing. If I wanted that, I would play a free-to-play game. So,
yeah.
Or I'd just go to Vegas, because it's basically just simulated gambling.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Of course, EA came back with their response to the whole thing, saying, "Oh, it wasn't really the full system that was in there. No, we're gonna tune it. We're gonna balance it." Yeah, right, guys. This is EA here. We're not really buying yeah. what you're selling at this point. Yeah. The end of loot boxes is hopefully nigh, and it couldn't come sooner.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is it's possible to do loot boxes in a non-scummy way.
Yeah, Overwatch did it.
I mean, yeah, Overwatch yeah. is the case study. So there is a model out there for how loot boxes can be done palatably. You just have all these other studios that are putting their hands in the cookie jar, and yeah, that hopefully this is all coming to a head now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, unless we got anything else to say about the topic of loot boxes, I think we probably have a show for this week.
Pretty much.
But anyway, if you haven't subscribed to the show, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, or your favorite RSS reader. We're available just about everywhere, so check us out there. We're also on the socials at facebook.com/smashbadsocial or facebook.com/day0update. So with that, I am Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
And we'll see you next week.